A Hero's Journey is a podcast filled with spoilers. We recommend reading the book each week before you listen, but we trust you to make your own decision.
Welcome to A Hero's Journey, a literary podcast. I'm your host and judge, Jack, and I'm here with my luscious lambs. No, that sounds creepy.
Yes.
My light-footed lambs.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
Each week, we look at a different book through Joseph Campbell's monomyth.
This week, we're discussing Red Country by Joe Abercrombie, the final in his series of standalones between the first and second First Law trilogies. This book follows a few different characters, like we have been for most of these standalone books. Shy and Lamb are two farmers who discover that their brother and adopted children, respectively, have been kidnapped by bandits and are being taken across the near country into the far country for an unknown reason, just that they're going to be sold. They track the children and the bandits across the country, eventually ending up in the Crease. Along the way, they pick up Temple, who is a lawyer for the Gracious Hands, a mercenary group led by our beloved friend Koska, who are in the employ of the Inquisition, also going across the near country into the far country, but they are looking for rebels. When they get to Crease, Shy and Lamb find out who took the children and who employs them, but cannot find the children themselves initially. Lamb is recruited to a pit fight with a famous Northman for control of Crease. After this fight, Shy, Lamb, Temple, and our beloved Koska, who has rejoined the group in Crease while searching for his rebels, go up to the mountains where the dragon people, a mysterious people who live in the mountains, have purchased children with ancient gold, indicating that they have a treasure hoard there. The group eventually recovers the children and the gold. However, the gold is in a crash with the rebels. At the end of the book, Temple, Lamb, Shy, and the two children are back in the near country and are able to set up a store to support themselves. Oh, and also Lamb is actually Logan Nine Fingers. Everybody should know that. Call Shivers comes and decides to leave Lamb alive, but he leaves anyway.
Wow. Leave Lamb alive?
Yeah, I'm not sure who wins in the battle between Shivers and Lamb.
I'm confident who wins, and it's not Shivers.
I don't know. Shivers is pretty badass.
I mean, Shivers has gotten fairly badass, but he's never going to be Logan Nine Fingers. And Logan Nine Fingers now has a sword by the Maker.
So does Shivers. Shivers has Logan Nine Fingers' original sword made by the Maker.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I still put all my money on Logan Nine Fingers nine times out of 10.
I mean, I would too, but they didn't even have to fight because Shivers is a good person.
A small period of time in which Shivers could have been a good person.
And he actively rejected it. We begin our journey where all brand new heroes are introduced when they go straight and try and get their kids back. Oh, no, sorry, that's recovering criminals. My bad.
To start off this week, we need to discuss who we're going to be discussing. I picked Shy for this. I know Logan Nine Fingers or Lamb has a really great journey. I think he shadows Shy for most of it. I just found Shy a little bit more interesting as we haven't discussed her before. And she is one of our main points of view, whereas Lam doesn't get a lot of points of view, or even I don't think he has any in this book. So I picked Shai, and her journey this week is to get her family back and safe. For the call to adventure, this is when Shai and Lam return to their farm to find the children kidnapped and Gali shot and killed. And obviously this is spurring her onto this adventure to go get the children back. For a refusal of the call, she and Lam spend time burying Gali and discuss the benefits of walking versus taking a car versus trying to get horses. They not really waste time, but spend enough time at the farm that they let the group of bandits get further ahead of them. For a meeting with the mentee, a little bit of a fun play on our traditional meeting with a mentor, I think we can look to meeting Leaf. He's a young, very naive boy, facing similar issues to Shai, you know, his family being taken and having to chase after them. And he is readily accepted into the group, and Shai, in Leaf's mind, Shai is probably more of a love interest, but in my mind, she plays a mentor role to him. R.I.P. Leaf, he didn't deserve that. For crossing the threshold, this is when they leave the main trail of bandits to follow the three deserters. In this, they're going into danger, going after the three people who deserted from the group. And they're also really crossing the threshold because they're changing their tactics now. Instead of just following blindly, they're going looking for information and a way to get ahead of the group or to get the jump on them. For a belly of the whale, this is when Lam starts killing people in that small village and then joining with Sweet immediately after because of Lam killing people. There's no turning back for Shai now. They've drew blood, kind of, and they've literally drew blood, and Sweet is offering them to join in this journey across the plains. And they're at this point more dedicated than they have been to seeing this quest through.
All right, I think you've chosen Shai. I would have chosen Logan Nine Fingers, but
I'm shocked.
You would have already assumed that, dear listener. I think I got no problem with Shai trying to get her family back. The called adventure, fairly straightforward. I'm not going to waste our time talking about it. The refusal of the call, I think, isn't as much a refusal as it is these people, for all their sort of violent tendencies, they also seem to be fairly, I don't want to say honorific because that's not the right word, but I don't think it would really even kind of appear. What's the word I'm looking for? It wouldn't even pop into their heads that they would not bury Gully because he was a close friend, and that's what you do. I don't think this was a, oh, this is more important than the thing that we're doing. This is a, okay, well, we get ourselves situated and do this thing that we literally have to do. And we see it later when they talk about like the prayers when the priest dies later in the story. And the discussion of walking versus the cart is just one of practicality. There's no point in this refusal where they go, oh, we're not going to go after these children.
I can mostly agree with you. I do think that burying Gali takes more time than it needs to. Shai is pretty gung-ho about going, but then Leaf's like, no, let's calm down. Let's think about this. Let's bury Gali. Let's take the cart. You know, you can't just walk after this. We have things to take care of here. And then Shai listens to him and they take care of those things. You're right. In Lam's mind, burying Gali is a necessity. It's not, you know, refusing the call or not going after the children. He's definitely going to be doing that. But for Shai, I think it is a refusal because she was 100% willing to just go leave Gali.
But she doesn't. she doesn't ultimately choose to stay because it's a refusal. She chooses to stay because she's convinced that it's the smart move. She never gets off the quest.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, you are the judge.
That has literally never fucking stopped you before, sir.
Well.
All right. So then moving on to our meeting of the mentee. Beyond the fact that we've changed the dynamic, it's not her mentor, she's being the mentor. The fact that he gets got so quickly, I don't... he gets killed when they're doing the hunting scene, right?
It's not right away.
It's not right away, but it's not like even halfway into the story.
Hey, also, it's a meeting with a mentor, dude.
I know, but I'm just saying that, like, even if we were trying to shift the paradigm, like, and he gets mentored more by other characters who aren't Shy than by Shy.
I think it is interesting that Lam, I don't think, fits the mentor here, whereas, I mean, he should, right? In a traditional story,
the old
ancient warrior should be the mentor.
See, Shy is this interesting balance of, like, she got her own kind of reputation, decided that she didn't want anything to do with it after somebody else died in her place, and went back to the farm sort of thing, where Logan is doing something very similar, but his crimes have a much larger thing. So I feel like if he had shared more with her, perhaps it would have been a more mentorship role. But since he keeps so much of, like, who he is hidden and from her, and at the very end when they have that conversation about him being a coward, I think just kind of proves the somewhat antagonistic relationship that they have instead of one of mentoring. For the crossing of the threshold, the three deserters, I understand why you chose it, because it's their first lead, right? Their first concrete thing to do. But I don't feel like it's anything that's shocking them or surprising them or any dangers that aren't, you know, even the dangers is there. It doesn't seem to be particularly dangerous. They handle them quite handedly. And, you know, they could have, I feel like, just interacted with them by not killing them. But I don't know. You're trying to say your belly is him killing the deserters?
Yeah. So the crossing of the threshold is they're on the path. They see and they go that way. And then the belly is them killing the deserters and setting off on this separate course with Sweet. And see, I'm saying that happens directly because of the killing. That's why I'm including it in there.
Okay. I don't think anything, just talking specifically about the crossing of the threshold, I don't think anything in what you've described is them leaving the path and going after this thing, if it's their pretty much their only lead that they've come across, is something that deviates them at all from the situation that they had, right?
Well, the reason I'm saying it's a crossing the threshold is because before this, here's the path. We're following the path. We're following the children. Now they're using a little bit of thought and tactics.
I mean, I see. I get it. I get why you're saying that. But it's a literal leaving of the path, but I don't think it's a figurative leaving of the path, because this is the road to the children. It's just not a straight line.
What does it change for Shy to make her more committed to things? Because I definitely get that for our belly.
It doesn't have to have that in the crossing. I think that just has to be in the belly, making them more committed.
I mean, I don't feel like this is the low. I don't feel like this is, like, if we look at it, the known limits of their world, right? She's already someone who has quite the body count, hunting down some stragglers and completely destroying them and torturing them. It's not something that is unusual for Shy. It's not like Shy is this innocent farm girl that Lam is slowly corrupting, right? She's already a bad person.
Yeah, there's a difference between, I think, killing one person and then specifically hunting a group of killers with the intention to
She killed more than one person in her past, didn't she?
I don't think so. She confesses to the one murder to Temple, and as far as I know, that's the only one.
She was definitely an outlaw, but I don't remember if she killed more people than... It doesn't really matter, but I thought she had.
So, Jack, where are we? Where are we here?
He's looking up how many people she killed. I
guarantee. No, I'm looking at the crossing the threshold again.
I don't guarantee it then.
Yeah, I'm not sold. Sorry, Alex.
Unlike those children, Jack is not sold.
You just don't want to give Abercrombie a good departure.
No, again, I didn't get a chance to read this one because I wanted to make sure I finished Crown of Swords. But based on everything you guys have said, it seems very much like this isn't a big enough departure from her normal world to be a crossing on that measure, and it's not a change in her mental state or anything in relation to the quest. So this isn't the farthest she's ever been from home or anything like that.
The counterpoint, Alex, last argument of Kings only didn't get the mentor. So, And before they are hanged was 3 out of 5. Didn't have refusal or belly. Just throwing that out there. For the belly of the whale, I understand why you've chosen it, right? The joining was sweet in his fellowship of the Not Rain is... You know, fine. It's different. It's kind of the merging of two separate quests, and they realize that it's going to help them achieve what they want, but it also introduces some new dangers to them and a cast of characters that I think fleshes out the story in a way that is typical of Joe Abercrombie, as opposed to, you know, these people set out to do a very specific thing, and then all of a sudden our menagerie of characters has grown tenfold. So I've got no problem.
That is going to close us out on our departure with a solid call to adventure and a solid belly of the whale. So we know where we begin and we know where we cross into the initiation. It's a little murky in between there. As all good heroes do, joining in with a fellowship of some kind, we come to our initiation.
Yeah, just as Jack said, now that we have our fellowship, Shai has a bunch of trials, and the first of them is just traveling across the cross. Yeah, it's just traveling across the plains with this group. It's difficult work. It's dangerous, and Shai gets a pretty big gift in quotes and temple. A new companion to join her and provide a lot of help along the quest, from his lawyering skills to being present. All of those skills that he has. For a second trial, this is during her time in Crease, where again, she's struggling to find this information about where the children are and who took them, Cantalus. And she luckily finds both. She figures out where the children are taken by the dragon people, and she finds Cantalus to take her up there. And the final trial is finding the dragon people and the battle that ensues there. Again, struggling, dangerous. She almost gets killed by one of the dragon people, and she does get the children in the end. For our meeting with a higher power, this has to be the mayor for me. The mayor who is that? She's the woman from Dugoska, right? From the second book.
I didn't think about that. What was her name?
I don't remember her name.
Yeah, that's Carlotte Don Eider.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, the mayor, is my higher power, because she's the one who provides the information and Cantlis, and then gives the situation for all of them to.
Wasn't she also where Call, Shivers, and the Duke, they were like hiding in that mountain stronghold at the end of
Best Served Cold? That's where she was.
Yeah. Okay, there you go.
All right. She provides the information and the situation that allows Shy to get to the dragon people. For our temptress, this is just to stop looking for her siblings, to continue on with Increase or with the Fellowship, with Sweet, with Temple, with anyone except Lamb, who is going to look for the children. And Lamb really offers her the chance to leave and stop looking for her siblings. Obviously, she doesn't take it. This is a small temptation, but I still think it's necessary to discuss it. For Atonement with the Creator, kind of a extended scene, but after they get the children, one of their companions, who you think is the leader of the rebels that the Band of the Gracious Hand is looking for, gets captured. He's not actually the leader. He's the uncle of the leader. But anyway, Lamb kind of gave him up and now is saying he's leaving Shy and he's going to go back up there. And Shy ultimately decides not to leave him, to go back up and help him. And also, Shy takes away the Band of the Gracious Hand to allow Lamb to do his best to save Seven. Unfortunately, you know, he ultimately dies, but I think there is the best atonement we have, with Lamb being the creator of Shy as the one kind of guiding her into this situation, who's a father figure to her, who she admits eventually is the closest thing she's ever had to a father. So their kind of agreement that it would be best for them to leave, but Shy deciding that she's going to help him anyway and accept Lamb into her family is the best atonement that we can get. For the apotheosis, this is the realization that Shy has that Temple is family, that she's happier with him around than without him. You know, there was a scene earlier, just for Jack's benefit, where Shy was captured by Cantlis after Shy and Temple had spent the night together. And instead of trying to save her, Temple jumps out the window and runs buck naked through the town of Crease to get help, essentially, but also to run away from the people who burst in with knives. So she was not talking to him for an extended period. And then at this point, she realized that she is happier with him after they crash and they lose all the gold. And then for the ultimate boon, this is Lamb coming back after he had been left mostly for dead among the Gracious Hand, surrounded in a building. And that makes her family whole. She has Lamb, Temple, and then Rowan Pitt, her two siblings, who had originally been stolen, setting the whole quest off.
For the Road of Trials, I think your first travel across the plains trial is a little lackluster. I don't think there's too much, and I think that she gains from it. And I think Temple is not a good example. Temple being her companion who ultimately abandons her to being kidnapped. It's just not a very good companion. Thinks like it's not a very good reward, and it's maybe a fitting reward for the nothing that she did to cross the plains. She mostly kind of got carried and info dumped on that particular part of the journey.
No, she definitely worked hard. And also, did you not just hear this discussion about Temple like being a good part of her family? He provides a lot of comfort for her by being there. He provides a lot of assistance with his lawyer skills and cunning. He's a great carpenter. I think that he's definitely a worthy companion to have gained while crossing the plains. One of the worthiest companions she could have picked up.
Everyone knows that you can trust a carpenter.
For the time increase, I think the information gathering is fine, although it seems like for the most part, she's kind of in the background, which is maybe how she prefers it, but I didn't see her having too much action on the big plot, more on the subplot. Thoughts on that?
What do you mean that she was not having effect on the big plot?
It seemed like Nine Fingers and Koska and you know,
more Nine Fingers, because that's all Zach could pay attention
no,
to.
No, I'm just saying that it seemed like the other fellowship interacted more with the plot of the town of Cease or Crease. Than she did directly, where she, you know, she has her mind fairly focused on one thing.
Yeah, she has her mind focused on the children. And them.
I know. I'm not saying I disagree with your point. I just feel like she did. She was so narrow-minded that she missed out on other points of the plot that the other characters got to interact with. Increase.
That's fair, but I don't think it takes away from the journey.
No, I think that's fine. I do disagree with your last point, because getting the children is the boon. So I don't really know how
If you think back to when I said the quest, it's to get her family back and safe. I know I didn't type it up there, but I did say it, and safe. So
okay, that's all fine. That doesn't change my point. My point is that how often do we have the ultimate boon be a trial? You know what I mean?
It's not the boon, though. That's what I'm trying to say. At the end, when Lam comes back and she has Lamb and Temple and the children all together, that's when the ultimate boon is, because everybody, her whole family,
and then
is there.
Lamb immediately leaves.
Not immediately. After some time.
In the story, immediately leaves.
It's called a time skip. I'll give you Zach, that's a little bit odd, but I'm willing to give the trials to Alex. I think she shows enough growth, and it's a big climactic battle that she has to overcome and use her wits and abilities.
I think I think the mayor is not a particularly good higher power, especially because the higher power relies so heavily on Shai and her crew to achieve the goals that she wants, right? She's been in this stalemate, like locked horns with Big Papa, or Papa, what's his name? And it's not until the party shows up that she's actually able to, you know, win. It's I don't think anybody else was going to best the named Northman that Nine Fingers takes down.
I'm still pretty sure that's just a dude named Lamb. Don't know what you're talking about.
All I know is that nobody...
Jack was Glamma Golden.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough.
Sorry, Zach.
That's okay. I just feel like she gets more help from them than they get from her, or that Shai gets from her specifically.
Like, while I was talking and trying to figure out who the mayor was and where she had been in Best Served Cold, I was thinking to myself, wait, why am I not saying Sevian, who broke into Papa Ringo's dice house during Lamb's fight
to save her
and saved her? Yeah, why was I not saying that? I can't for the life of me figure it out. Now I want to change my answer.
Okay, I accept your changed answer to Sevian.
For the temptress, I don't think she ever considers this, right? I think you're like, oh, it's light, we have to at least mention it. Lamb, you know, mentions it simply because Lamb is extremely is a realist, I guess you could call it.
Can't be practical.
Yeah. Yes.
Got to be realistic about these things.
But I don't think it's something that Shai ever considers.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. There was I was really happy when I saw this because there is a paragraph about this where they actually discuss it. Well, Lam offers it. And she doesn't even like take a second to say, no, that's not who I am. So good job, Shy. Quickly becoming my favorite character in this, the best character in the good sense.
Temple is arguably 10 times a better person than Shy is.
I don't know. Presumably there's some nice people that have been murdered on the streets of any of these given cities that were better than all of these people.
For the Atonement, the creator, why is Lam her creator?
He her daddy.
No, he's not. He's her stepfather. And even then...
You're saying step-parents aren't real parents, Zach?
And yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Don't at me. And she's already all kinds of screwed up before he comes into her life.
What was the question in there?
The question is, why is Lam the creator? And why is her, you know, rescue of him the atonement?
Well, he's her creator because he's the father figure. He's the like traditional father figure in this book.
Even though she's, for the most part, doesn't seem to like him very much.
She seems to like him fine.
I don't know. I my whole thing's been poisoned by their like departure scene, I guess.
The relationship becomes strained during this, but I think they end up like fine and liking each other enough. They live together and she like wants to keep him at the store with him at the end. And it's really like he's done all of this rescuing of her throughout the series, the book.
I think that's your stronger point because it's her doing the thing that he's been doing so far. But no, I'm mostly happy with it. It seems like a reversal of not necessarily fortune, but of circumstance. The apotheosis, are you trying to be very temple specific, or is it the idea that she doesn't have to limit herself in general?
It's pretty temple specific.
She loves him.
Yeah. I mean, it's temple specific because everybody else who is her family are her literal siblings or Lam. It's temple specific.
Get her family back. Back would imply pre-existing members only.
Oh my fucking God, Zach.
Meaning that Temple is, if he's a lawyer, he'd appreciate this.
Temple doesn't like being a lawyer.
Temple likes being a carpenter, remember? And you can always trust a carpenter.
For the ultimate boon, I've really got no problem with it. I think Lam's re-entry into the dynamic... I feel like it should be more stressed than it was, considering the fact that one of the children literally stabbed him and then he almost beat them to a bloody pulp. But that doesn't seem to be a big deal to anybody.
Look, so the bloody nine do what the bloody nine do.
I guess it's not a big deal for us then.
On that harrowing note of child abuse, we come to the end of our initiation with only that temptation missing. So Shy... right on point. We keep trucking along. We kill off Leaf. We know what we're about.
Yeah, I wish we'd spend a little bit more time on that Leaf thing, but oh well.
Yeah, he's dead, so who cares?
Yeah.
Again, still overlooking that whole child abuse thing. We come to the return.
Yes. I was going to say, refusing to go home, we go home. But whatever. So the refusal to return is going to the Buckhorn's house. Exactly like I said, them not returning to their home where they're going to live in the near country, but instead staying around in Crease for a little longer. For the magical flight, I don't have a real good one, unfortunately. I guess there's the ride on the wagon that Temple and Shai take away from the Gracious Hand and crash, you know, losing all the gold. But I don't really like it because it's not, you know, of where the boon was, and it's not really magical. It's very unmagical, very realistic. They're with the horses on a cart, and then they crash because they don't know how to drive the cart and break the brakes. The only other thing is the time skip to the near country. So I guess I would prefer to go with that, but there's not really a good one. For our rescue from without, this is when they get to the Buckhorn's house. There's Koska there threatening them, ready to kill them with hedges, and there's Friendly there as well, threatening everybody. And Temple kind of talks Koska down, makes him realize that this isn't what's going to make him happy, and distracts him long enough for our biographer friend, Mr. Sorbeck, to grab his own sword and stab him, kind of defusing the situation. Before our crossing a return threshold, this is the return to Square Deal, where Shai buys the general store that we started the story at and establishes herself in the community, providing for her family with this. For a master of two worlds, Shai is the shopkeep and savvy businesswoman, and also a family woman with Temple and the children as her family, and Lamb as well, for a short period, because our freedom to live is after Call Shivers and Lamb meets and discuss potentially dueling. Shivers decides that he's going to leave, and Lamb decides that he needs to leave also to kind of take his grudges away with him and let Shai and the whole family live without the burden of the bloody past of the Blood Nine to potentially come and disrupt their lives again.
For your refusal of the return, I don't think this is particularly good, because they don't, you know, even end up back at the farm at where they started anyway. So they're not delaying the going back there. They're all together still, but now in a new location. And by the end of your return, they're all together, but in a new location. What is different about going to Buckborn's house as opposed to the end of the story after the time skip where they're at the store? Why is this a refusal as opposed to them just the beginning of what they are continuing to do?
Because they're not home yet in the story.
Okay. We're rejecting that.
Oh, that's fine.
I was fairly confident you were going to choose the wagon ride, because it reads somewhat like a Universal Studios kind of mixed with a rated R theme park ride.
Yeah,
they fucking
not in the wagon.
I know,
not in the wagon.
But Zach said rated R Universal Studios, right? That's what came to mind.
Welcome to Universal presents 50 Shades of Grey, the ride. There's a splash zone.
Oh God. Okay. Well, unfortunately, we now have our end state.
For our rescue from without, I actually think this is a pretty good one. Temple did a good job. I really resent him for it, because had he not, Koska would still be alive. I don't like Sorbeck because of that, but it is, even though I probably be more likely to play the role of a Sorbeck in this world than a Koska, but who knows what fate has in store for us all. For the crossing of the return threshold, the main problem I have with it is that, you know, Square Deal still isn't their kind of starting point, right? It's not they have changed not just locations, but occupations and...
Well, yeah, it's a return to a new normal. They bought the shop.
Yeah, Square Deal is also like, that's the town that they're
from. Yeah, where they were. Yeah, I know. I don't have much on that one. I don't like your Master of Two Worlds, because I don't think they're extremely separate. In my mind, the two worlds that Shy is, you know, has conflict with is sort of fighter, outlaw fighter, bloodthirsty, and homebody.
You mean the things that Logan is struggling with? She's also struggling. Oh, Zach.
But
that's some fucking symmetry.
I think shopkeep and family woman are the same thing. And I think that she only is at the end of the story really showcasing half of who she is.
Yeah, she forsakes half of it.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And Lamb takes the other half.
Yeah, and leaves.
But that does leave her with the freedom to live her life the way that she wants with only the one half.
Oh my God, I'm so happy. 11.
Not a hero.
11 points is hero?
No, let's move it to 12.
I think 12 is probably the better hero mark. I mean, she's better than Glocka, so, and Glocka still got it, so what do you want?
That's going to close us out on our return with just that refusal of the return and Master of Two Worlds missing, leaving us at 11 out of 17, and technically making Shy a modern hero. However, it's also making me consider revising what it means to be a modern hero. So if you have any opinions about that, you can reach out to us on our Discord server or at Twitter at @a_heroes_journey and let us know if you think we should be resetting the point threshold. We may also put a poll on Spotify, so if you get your podcast there, don't forget to leave us an answer. Coming in on closing thoughts. Yeah, I didn't read this one this week. I got busy. I have to read more Wheel of Time. Alex said that I would be fired if I don't finish Storm of Swords. So looking forward to...
You've got like such a long plane ride. You got plenty of time.
Crown of Swords. Storm of Swords is George R.R. Martin. So I don't have any strong thoughts on this one, but it sounds like another fun trip to Drop a Combi, and I will be putting it on the list of catch-up books for the next year.
Thought that you have read this one previously.
No, I read Heroes and Best Served Cold, but I read Best Served Cold after we did the episode on Best Served Cold, and then I read the Heroes, and then I read the summary for Red Country because I was busy.
Dang. All right. Sorry. Well, I think that this is my favorite. I don't know if it's my favorite Joel Abercrombie book, because Before They Are Hanged is just excellent, like, top tier, chef's kiss, 5 out of 5 stars. But this is very close to that as well. I just loved this world, and I loved that we have like almost so close to being actually good people in this book with Shy and Temple at the end. I think he redeems himself pretty nicely. And man, it's just always so fun to go back and see Logan Nine Fingers too. Him just being an impressive fighter, and the writing for him is amazing. You can really see in this where we see from an outsider's point of view what happens when he gets in the circle and fights, how he totally changes his expression and everything changes into the Bloody Nine. And yeah, good job, Mr. Abercrombie. This was a fantastic read. I have nothing but good things to say about this book.
So to start my summary, I guess the only question I have for Alex is, if the old empire is, you know, fallen Rome, or even, you know, the Holy Roman Empire, what have you, and England is supposed to be some sort of, you know, British-esque medieval meets Norway, what is the stereotype that you would assign to the realm in which we found the setting of this book? Because it felt heavy-handed to me, and the fact that you have to think about it means that I feel like I might be wrong.
Was it not just the American West?
Yeah, it's just like the Wild West, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they go across the plains into...
And there's like the Native gold, American California. Tribes, essentially. Mm-hmm. And there's like, now we're talking about, instead of talking about like senators and crap, we're talking about lawyers and mayors and mining towns. And I like that. I like that Abercrombie gets to explore these different things. But I guess the problem I have is that I feel like it's all going to start to get very messy from a thematic perspective at some point. And I don't know how that will look. And I still, you know, enjoyed the story. I think it'll be interesting to see how Lamb integrates into society. And I think that I'm very happy he is kind of leaving this sort of nomadic life behind.
Happy that he's happy.
I don't know that we're ever going to see Lamb again.
Let Zach believe.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, then they should have at least killed him.
Lamb can't die. He should transcend into the spirit realm.
Because I totally thought the first time they mentioned ghosts that we were finally going to get the reference back to the fact that Logan Ninefigure can talk to the dead, but still haven't gotten to see that again, Joe. So what's the deal with that?
I thought he talked to nature spirits.
Were they not? Yeah, they weren't. I thought they were ancestors, but maybe they were nature spirits.
They were ancestors.
Other ancestor spirits?
Yeah.
And also that we never talk about, like, the gorilla mutants that live in the North anymore. No,
they
fucking weren't.
They're nature spirits. I just looked it up.
I'm sorry. They did actually talk about the Shenka, the mutant people in this book, Zach. That's who the, like, young, fit dragon people went to fight.
Oh! Okay, I get that. That's cool. I like that. Thanks for the gorilla mutants. Overall, I enjoyed it. I think as someone who prefers the older sort of references to Wild West, I'm still partial to the first three. And I mentioned somewhat, I think, foreshadowy that the introduction of cannons at the end of the last book was going to have world-shaping consequences, just like it did in our world. And so to see them used here in this Wild West setting so immediately is interesting.
I don't think you're going to like the follow-up series, unfortunately.
Well, glad we don't have to read it then.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we do.
Jack can't say that because he hasn't even read these books.
I've read most of them at this point. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, I've been your host and judge, Jack.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
And join us next week when we come back to Redland in the Wheel of Time.
Oh, thank you.
Yay!
Yeah.
All right.
What about one of them eater folk? They seem nice. They just like food.
Wasn't there a magi in this story somewhere that I forgot about? Sorry, was
Zacharias.
Yeah, with the cool name.
Ha ha ha.